you don't take it, your confidence is going to infuse her trust as much as her trusting you is going to bolster your confidence. But it's two ways. You need to trust to take risks, but it is the taking risk that builds the trust. Is the fear, is the threat, the intensity of a connection with someone else? Or is it the sexual component of that connection?
Yeah, romantic and sexual, I don't know, however you want to slice that. But watching her fall in love with someone else was about the most painful thing that I've experienced. And I don't want to do that again.
Can I ask you a crazy question? Because I see how painful this is. Did she fall in love with you again as well?
No.
Does she know how painful it was for you to talk about that with her?
Yeah, sometimes.
Not enough? I think you need to say more right now.
It was more than just, like, jealousy or... It wasn't just about the sex. It was... feeling like an outsider. Feeling like you were having this experience, this new experience without me, and feeling like not knowing what this meant for us and worrying that I was going to lose you.
Just go right back to when you would wait for her to come home.
Yeah. Those were hard nights to sit at home. I would try not to think about it. But sometimes I couldn't help it. I couldn't fall asleep. Even, I think we talked once about how it bothered me, how you would stay out late. And then the next time you were out with her, you stayed out late again. And it was like, you know, the one thing that I asked of you, you couldn't put me before her. I probably tried to talk myself out of feeling that way because this was something that we had agreed to. And because I didn't want to make you feel guilty about it.
How did you come to the agreement?
She came to me just about a year ago and said that she was having a strong attraction toward women and she wasn't really sure what it meant or...
Women or this woman?
There are other examples.
But that it was strong enough that she felt like tempted to act on it and... felt like it might happen regardless.
And how was that experience for you? Her actually coming?
Well, I appreciated the fact that she came to me before anything had happened and was honest with me about it. And we talked a lot about it.
And you thought, this is a kink you need to go to explore and get it out of your system and then come back home? While I ask him a question about their monogamy agreement, I also understand that there was never a mutual agreement. This was an accommodation from him in an attempt not to lose her. And it had the garb and the disguise of a conversation about consensual non-monogamy, but it was actually an abandonment prevention strategy.
I felt like it was a part of herself that I didn't want to deny her from exploring. Mm-hmm.
And that has changed.
I don't think either of us thought it was going to go this way.
I think there's some truth to that. I think when I came to him, I really believed, I thought it was just a sexual attraction. And that these other examples were just a sexual desire. And so I think I very much painted it in that way, or expressed it in that way.
Mm-hmm.
That this was just about sex. And so that felt probably more safe for him, and maybe even for myself.
Because
I didn't, I really don't think I had any concept that it was more than that.
But why is it making it just about sex making it safer? Or how?
I think because I thought it didn't mean more beyond that, or more emotionally, or more, I don't know.
If it's just about sex, then it's about a part of you that you have not yet discovered. But if it's about love, then it's about other people who can replace you.
Yes.
One wishes life was simple.
Mm-hmm.
You could divide them like that. But no. But this isn't gone away. Mm-hmm. So then where are you now?
In limbo.
Limbo is a good way to describe.
Right. But if you close the door, do you actually reinforce the relationship, or do you reinforce the potential of her leaving altogether? If you leave the door open, there is another possibility, which is that as you fall in love elsewhere, or more with yourself for that matter, you fall in love with him as well. Meaning that energy that is inside of you is brought home as well, not just siphoned away. And you learn to have a new and deep appreciation for what you have, even though it's not exclusive. And your relationship becomes defined not by exclusivity or exclusiveness only, but by uniqueness. Do you talk about all of that, or is the conversation muffled at this moment?
I think the conversation about that is entirely muffled.
But then what is it that we need to talk about?
Because I think I'm weighing very much what's inside versus what's outside, and whether or not I want what's outside.
Altogether?
Yes.
Instead?
Yes.
Okay. So that's a different conversation. This is not about which relationship do we want to be and where do we draw our lines. This is about, do I want to be with you?
Because I'm being forced, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that, but he has made it clear that that's not an option.
In this moment, she has just spoken truth. If I understand well, her preference would be, I will be with you, I want our family too, but I want this relationship. It is her with her relationship that she would like, if possible, to pursue without knowing where it goes, while also having him. But for him, if he lets her go, he loses himself. And if he asks her to stay, he may lose her. That's a terrible deal. If I accept what you want, and I agree with you to have the other relationship or relationships, which there's an assumption that only she has, which I will put a question mark on that, you know, it's a way for me to keep you, but I'll go mad and I'll lose me and I'll lose my integrity and I'll lose whatever else, maybe my self-respect, maybe. But if I say no, I have to live with the possibility that you may choose to go. If you say, we're continuing with this exploration, this is where it's taken us, and I'm not prepared to lose you, so I'm going to see where this goes. This may be a 1 year, 2 year, this may be another new life. You may have, you know, who knows? Who knows? This is one of those where you just plunge into an unknown. But you need a very good communication system for that, better than the one you have. It won't be the marriage you imagined.
No, but I also feel like I have had a taste of what it's like, and I didn't like that at all. I know it was a very limited experience.
But you were not included.
No.
See, the taste of what you had is not to be repeated. It was you sitting on the edge waiting to see, right. You know, that is miserable. If this becomes an exploration of another lifestyle, then he needs to be included in your life. And not here, this is great, this is less, or this complements, and this. It really needs to be that he is an ally and he's your partner in that part of your life as well. But it's a different setup. It's not, I draw a line to go and have my own little private secret garden of which, you know, you have no access. And I decide when I come home and I let you be sleepless, fretting and worried and obsessing. That is not a model.
Right.
That's a tantrum. I'm freaking tired of doing everything that I'm supposed to do and being dutiful and this studying family closeness and doing what's expected of me. And this is one big fuck you. And I come home when I want. I deserve to think about me for once. And you're the husband, so you get the whole intensity of that need that has been cultivated for years and decades before you ever came along. So from talking about monogamy and non-monogamy, I also wanted to get a sense what kind of sexual communication have they actually had between them. And that's when she tells me about Puerto Rico.
Last summer we went away, the two of us. It was the first time we've been away, just the two of us without the kids, in probably 3 years. You know, we went to Puerto Rico for a couple of nights. We had a very nice time, but I will say that it was the first time, like, if you compared the trip that we had 3 years before that to that trip, it doesn't even feel like the same couple, in my opinion. If you think about our trip to London, when we went, the two of us, and then you looked at Puerto Rico, not even the same couple.
As in?
Sexually. And, like, the passion, connection, like, not even the same couple.
As in better? As in?
No, way worse. And
and that was before?
This was before any of this happened.
Any of this happened.
And that through some of this, we both talked about it even right after the trip. We were aware. That didn't seem to be a part of the time that we spent together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think through this, we have talked a little bit about, you know, have we not done enough? Have we not been, you know, more tried to do new things or be more exploratory in that way? And I think we've had conversations about times. So, you know, he'd be like, well, you know, remember that time I did this? And I'm like, that was 18 months ago. Or, you know, it was, you know, it's not been a priority, I think, is what that has it probably boils down to. And at least then initially kind of coming out of that experience, I feel like I did try to kind of talk a little bit about, you know, I wanted you to notice when I wore cute underwear or when, you know, I wanted to feel wanted and really like, and not just be a chore or mechanical or not, or autopilot.
And did it change? Because you can have a good conversation that says, we've kind of lost track here. We're on autopilot. And it becomes a generative conversation in which you, you know, bring in the contractors. But it can also be a conversation in which you just blame each other and kind of express your dissatisfaction and the leak continues.
I don't think much has changed.
Okay.
The sex conversation is hard for me.
Because he's not going to become a woman that makes love to you. But he can make love to you knowing you as a woman differently than what he has known you till now. There is a level of intimate self-knowledge that two women share. And women generally do a very poor job at actually explaining this to their male partners.
Mm.
But now that you know more, if you do it in a way that isn't critical, but that says, I have some keys for us, then he's an open man. He will participate with you, but you can't come to him from the place of this is good and this is bad.
Mm-hmm. I get that. And I do think, I understand that.
I know you get it, but you have to do it. Mm-hmm. Meaning you can't have another tantrum.
Right.
The sex tantrum. You don't have to talk. You can show him. Am I on the right track?
Yeah.
Or are you going to say it yourself? I'm here. You have me for another 5 minutes, so take advantage. I'll help you to talk about sex.
I think so. Sometimes, though, I'm not sure. And I don't know if I just need to set this aside. Sometimes there is a question, I think, in my head is that, like you said, that he's not going to be like having sex with a woman. And is there some pleasure in it for me that it is a woman?
Yes. I'm going to give it to you in reverse. Many times when I have worked with gay people who live with partners in straight relationships, or partners from the other gender, for that matter, simply, their sexuality is to same sex. Their attractions, their fantasies, primarily they think same sex. But they have a particular connection with this person. And their sexual intimacy with their partner doesn't come from the fact that that's where their turn-on lies. Sex is multidimensional. So you can have profound attractions and turn-ons and fantasies that are not about men and still enjoy being with this man. Is that the most exciting sex? Not necessarily, but it can be, you know, but that's not all what the relationship is for as well. The most exciting sex probably doesn't take place in the house with two young children to begin with, unless you're into the transgressive nature of that. But, you know, so, and him too. He may have all kinds of fantasies that are not necessarily about what you have when he's trying to be a good man with a good husband to the good wife and all of that. But you haven't even begun to talk about all of this. You see, this is where this can become actually really interesting. What is it like to start talking about sex? And what is the difference between who we are with each other, who shows up when we are together, versus all kinds of other parts of us that we've never really revealed to each other? That's erotic intimacy.
Right.
It's the kind of self-revelation that takes place through sex that don't show up in any other part of your life. So you may prefer women and still like him. That's part of mixed orientation. Mm-hmm. And there won't be other men because that's not where the attraction lies. But there is something about you and him that feels home. That's what that would look like. Mm. And there's a certain way that you are with him that will be very different from how you are with the women, but it still can be better and more connected than what you've had, because autopilot is simply a form of sleep. Mm. What you want is conscious sex.
Yes.
Willful, premeditated, and conscious. That makes it exciting. Not just the underwear. The underwear can help, but it's not. The underwear can also mean nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if I feel like that's one of the challenges in where we're at right now, is that we're both in our heads too much. In the bedroom. She's told me that she doesn't necessarily feel desired towards me, or not as much, like her desire for women is stronger than her desire for me. That doesn't really help my confidence. And so it feels like I need to like prove myself. And then I think that she's sometimes thinking too much about, does this feel right? Is this what I want?
This being marriage?
Being with
him?
Being with him.
Well, making love to him.
Making love to him, yeah. More related relation just to sex.
Those are questions that only you're going to answer. That's not relational.
Mm-hmm.
If at some point you lose that interest, he cannot manufacture it in you.
Yeah.
You cannot manufacture desire.
Yeah.
You can do a lot of things to stoke it, to intensify it, to ignite it, but you can't create it.
As I've told her, like, from a confidence perspective, it's hard for me to do that and not feel like it's being reciprocated. Like, knowing that the desire is not there on her part.
No, but she's telling you, I need to connect with you differently.
I guess I'm just worried that it's not enough. It won't be enough, even if
you
I do.
You don't know.
I know.
But you may have to be up for the challenge.
I know.
You know, you want her to be into it, but take it as a gift that a woman is willing to initiate you. And if you're ever not with her, you'll have something to bring to the next one. But that is a personal decision that you make as well. Am I up for that challenge? Am I willing to see this not as a test, but as a gift? That would be a real internal revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine that?
I would definitely be open to that. And like you said earlier, like you were telling her to show me.
Mm-hmm.
And I would totally be open to that.
But then I want you to say to her, show me.
Okay.
That's a confident man.
Okay.
Because he doesn't need to know. He will learn from her. It's actually freeing. Would that be interesting to you?
I think so. I certainly am willing to show him.
We're going to have to stop. I'm a little bit upset because I feel like it took us a long time to get to where we need to go. And that we are finally here and not doing enough with this. It's both of you with certain legacies. You're both peacemakers.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But in different ways.
She can't have needs because everybody else has needs. But you can't have needs because you're supposed to be small, not take up space.
Yeah.
And this is an opportunity for both of you to rewrite those scripts as well.
Absolutely.
And for you to say to her, I am here rather than I'm trying to make myself invisible, would be a transformation for life. The more space you claim, the more she thinks you can take care of yourself. The more she thinks you can take care of herself, the less she will think that she has to be your mother. The less she thinks you can be your mother, the more sexually attracted she can be to you. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. And I also think it's about then feeling like I can invite him into that space.
Yes,
more
then he can take care of you and he can make love to you and all of those things as well. And this is what you need to do in the couples therapy that you're in my opinion. You cannot separate the relationship from the sexuality.
No.
And make one, you will miss the boat and she'll be gone. Because she's in a mode of panic too, where she thinks, if I don't do this now, I'm going to go back to where I was, and I can't go back to where I was because I can't live like that anymore.
I know.
You are in a gut renovation. You may not have planned it, but the cracks became so big, you have no choice. You have to renovate the relational home. Part of my assessment in working with this couple involved being clear if this is really a conversation about consensual non-monogamy, in which both partners are curious about exploring alternative renderings and different boundaries and making room for her relationship with this other woman or perhaps with other women, or if in fact, rather than it being a mutual agreement, it was an accommodation on his part in order to make sure that she doesn't leave him. And it was more an abandonment prevention strategy for him. And on the other hand, she would feel that he was forcing her to make a choice between him and between the woman she fell in love with. And nobody here was actually nearly as free to move as they wished or as they presented themselves as when they initially came in.
Couple 4, a romantic revival.
I became an instant parent when I got married to 4 kids who lost their first mom to suicide.
My first wife took her life on St. Patrick's Day of 2011. A year later, we met and we've been picking up the pieces.
This next couple has confronted death in their midst. For the past 6 years, this event has been at the center of their family life.
Over these now 6 years that I've been in their lives, we have been in that survival mode. It has been the most heart-wrecking, yet profound experience of love in my entire life.
They are now ready to live again. As a New Year's resolution, the couple chose a word for themselves, an aspiration, revive. And I have a sense that they came to work with me so that together they can transition from not dead to alive and from survival to revival.
She's not like anyone I've ever met, which is why I knew I needed to get a ring pretty quick, because I thought if I don't, someone else is going to sweep her off her feet.
When you say she's not like anyone you've ever met.
Well, the depth, the types of things that stir her heart and her soul, it's refreshing. That's what drew me to her, was her ability to go there.
And to take you there.
Yeah, to take me there. It's caused some friction along the way because it's tough to learn when you haven't grown. It doesn't come natural.
To you.
And to me, right. And so there's been times where she has talked about wanting to connect deeper or go deeper. And I'm thinking, we already are. This is more connected than I've ever been before. In that sense, there's some difficulties.
What other important parts of your lives do I need to know?
I guess one of the reasons we've come is the long, arduous journey after a suicide and the impact that that's had on me and on the kids. I've been gone a lot through the years with the military, just knowing that I've missed a lot of things. And my family history is an interesting one. Mom and dad divorced when I was 2 years old, and they both got remarried and had kids. And so I kind of bounced between the two families. And my stepmother was not particularly a wonderful stepmother to have, was not a very nurturing person. And
is that an understatement?
Oh, yeah.
So say it as it is.
Yeah, she just wasn't a good person, you know. She was very manipulative. She was verbally abusive and a couple times physically. And then after they divorced, my dad had custody of me instead of my mom. So
how come?
the simple terms that I was told that I went with my dad was because she wasn't ready to settle down, and he was. There's a lot that's probably buried in that statement. I haven't really wanted to know the why.
The theme of children that are abandoned by their mother runs through generations for you.
Sure.
It's a nice way of saying it. She wasn't ready to settle down.
Right.
And your children, you think, were abandoned by their mother.
Oh, sure.
When she died by suicide.
Absolutely.
How do you think your experience with your mom translates into what goes on between you and your kids vis-a-vis their mom?
I don't know that there was a deep attachment with my mom. I might have got that up until the age of two, but I don't remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the stories I've heard with my stepmom, you know, as a three-year-old, when she came into my life, my aunt said she remembers seeing me try to crawl up into my stepmother's lap and, you know, pushing me away. And so I had that, you know, being pushed away from her. And then my mom just wasn't there for the first, you know, from age 2 to 6, probably. So there's a gap there that I don't really remember much time with her.
Right. And we have two kinds of memory. We have explicit memory and implicit memory. And explicit memory is kind of the conscious awareness of facts. But implicit awareness and implicit memory lives in our body.
Mm-hmm.
And the body remembers. And the body remembers, right? Particularly when you try to get close to your wife. Do you ever connected those dots?
You probably have.
Yes. It's so clear.
Say more.
I think that's the root of a lot, is what happened with his mom and stepmom.
The root of a lot of what?
Disconnection between us. For a while, I thought it was what happened with his former wife. But then the more I learned, it was kind of a like, oh, this really isn't, it just continued through her. He couldn't trust his own mother, but then the mother figure in his life, his stepmother.
Mm-hmm.
So he built up a wall and said, I'm not going to trust or be confident in pursuit of me.
Mm-hmm.
Secure in knowing that it's not going to be a rejection.
I think sometimes I struggle with coming into the level of connection that she's desiring, not out of fear, but simply out of not, I don't know what you're talking about. It's almost like speaking a different language.
I have a good example.
Oh, okay.
If I'm upset, to me the natural response is come in and hug me, like comfort me or...
Yeah.
And it's, he just stands and looks at me, stares at me, and it feels like where I want connection, it's just, there's no movement.
Mm-hmm.
You freeze?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I do freeze in those situations, but it's not out of fear. It's not feeling, I guess.
That's what freezing is. Yeah.
Okay.
In tracking the brain's responses to trauma, we are often familiar with fight and flight, but we also have freeze. And sometimes it seems to me that the freeze points to an even more overwhelming set of experiences that were just simply too much to absorb and left the person frozen, helpless, and in a state of terror. And do you know where in your body you freeze?
No.
Is it a knot in your stomach? Is it a constriction in the chest? Is it a stiffening of the hands?
I've never stopped to think about that.
That's right.
So I don't know.
Feelings are embodied experiences.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't move, it doesn't mean you're feeling nothing.
Yeah.
Sometimes it means you're feeling so much that the system is on overload and you shut down.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of going to your head, I'm going to suggest you go to your body. Because the same way that you wanted a hand to reach out to you when you were upset is what she's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't get that hand.
I think you compound that underlying storyline with everything that I went through with my former wife. It culminated in a suicide, but it had been at least 3 years of daily wondering, am I going to come home from work and find her or the kids hurt? And seeking help and never really, didn't really work. Nothing seemed to help. But I know for a fact that she had multiple affairs. It was years of rediscovering or realizing that the life that I thought I had wasn't the life that I had.
What I learned from his description is that there was way more than just the series of infidelities. A month before his wife took her life, she asked for a divorce. And after she died, he learned of the extensive, multiple years of drug abuse, the neglect and the danger that the children were put in. And here he is not just angry at the fact that she killed herself, but at the consequences of her behavior on her children. So he's angry at a dead woman, and he's stuck, and he doesn't know where to go.
He's just gone through so much. So it's always been easier to just feel numb. But not allow yourself to grieve. I think that's been the thing I've not really ever seen. That side of him is grief. I've seen a lot of things. I've seen anger, a numbness. I've seen resolve. But I haven't really seen grief at all. It's been strange because I feel like I've somehow grieved for the loss. It's like they haven't been able to access that for themselves, so it's almost this place where I've grieved and just felt such heartbreak. The best way for me to describe what suicide is like, you have an earthquake. In the initial earthquake, there's damage, but there's actually more destruction that comes in the aftershock. And that's what I entered into, is the aftershock. And when we first met, there was a resiliency, but he wasn't that far removed from it. It was about a year removed from his former wife passing. And I was such a different person, and I didn't really need anything from him at the time, on my own and independent. And he would initiate and just all these different ways. And I had never experienced that on that level.
Physically as well?
Well, we were apart because we were in different states. So not really physically, no. But I was okay with that because of my past, my history with, I've endured rape. I've a long history of a lot of sexual trauma, of abuse, of all kinds of things. And I'd done a lot of work to find healing so that when I did come to a place where I was ready to say yes to a man, I would feel like my idea of sexuality and sensuality was restored.
She has done the basic initial work on her traumatic experiences.
And she already knows that she is ready to open up and welcome someone and connect with a man sensually, sexually, as she says. I'm beginning to understand even more what they mean when they say we want to revive. And from where I come from, as a child of Holocaust survivors, I grew up with people who talked about the horrors with flat affect. It's actually very familiar to me. I know that dissociative state. And I also know those who tried so hard to not just not be dead and survive, but to really reconnect with a sense of aliveness and vitality and vibrancy and risk-taking and joy. And that's where she wants to place herself. Trauma work, and especially work around sexual trauma, sometimes is very good at removing the cast and dealing with the pain, but stops short of helping people to actually rehabilitate that limb that is now free of a cast so that it can run and dance and be free again. It's about beating back the deadness and the loss to reclaim the sense of aliveness and vitality.
I think a really key component to our marriage is when we got married, we'd been together for a year and a half. And a week after our honeymoon, he left for 6 months for work. So we started with me basically being a single parent with four kids.
Who are all coming out of
the trauma
of losing
their biological mother.
We were in survival mode.
Stopping
the
hemorrhaging.
Yeah. And we weren't able to focus so much on
our marriage
and establishing our relationship because we were trying to to save some lives.
Yes.
It felt like.
But that's why you're here today.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You're here today telling me, first we did marriage, we did family, we did children, we did surviving, and now we want to create our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Do you come back with experiences from the military that compound some of this?
I feel like for me, it was more about just being separate from my family with all the stuff going on. And I would have to leave. My attachment was with my family, and it was a war zone there. So that's where the trauma was. It wasn't.
You just saw something now. What did you just see?
Visually?
Yeah.
Well, I go back to the day I found her.
And you see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That and my youngest was the only one that was home, thankfully. But she was in her crib. And so that image as well of coming home and, you know, finding my one-year-old who had been crying for who knows how long, waiting for someone to come find her or get her out of her crib.
And when you see the crib,
mm-hmm.
which image is stronger? The crib or your wife?
I think maybe the crib, which is weird. But, you know, my daughter is now, she wasn't yet two, and she's now just turned nine, and she still remembers that day. She remembers being, you know, she's crying like she's never cried before. And that's hard, you know, because that's tangible. I don't know what my former wife was. You can assume what her emotional state was. You can assume she was sad. You can assume she was depressed. She might have been happy. I don't know. I have no idea. But I know exactly how my daughter was.
Mm.
And I know that the effects linger.
If you let him do this, he will cry more and you will cry less. and you'll start to feel less like you have to be the catalyst for all the denied emotions. And you'll revive because he won't put the mourning on you. So don't be scared for him.
I'm grateful to see this.
What else does she say, your daughter?
What else does she say about that day? That I came and rescued her.
You did?
He cries for his children, but he can't cry for himself. The baby he sees crying in the crib is his child and also himself.
But I guess I do struggle too with, while it was really tangible that I did rescue her and help her with my oldest daughter and my middle son, I'd not done a very good job at rescuing them, because as they've struggled with their own suicidal ideations, instead of meeting them with compassion or grace, it was really more angry. How could you do this? Like, you know what we've been through. Like, why would you choose to go down this path? How could you do this to me again? I'm so tired of dealing with this heaviness. The scary part too, when someone is, from my perspective, when someone is at the point of being suicidal, there's nothing you can do about it. I mean, the day that my former wife committed suicide, she was at her psychiatrist's office. We're doing all the things you're supposed to do to get help, and it didn't help. And it leaves you in a weird place of feeling that you're powerless to do anything, because at the end of the day, they have their own agency and they can choose to do that. And it led me down a path of not compassion, and I didn't like it. I didn't like that I responded that way. It's impacted my relationship with my middle son. He was really struggling, and I responded really out of anger. I wasn't able to rescue him. I wasn't able to meet him.
Does he know you're here?
He does.
Oh, he does. Mm-hmm. You've talked to him.
Okay. Can you imagine? You know, we went to talk to this woman, and I was telling her how bad I feel in the way that I reacted to you. And I was so scared and felt so powerless that I got angry, because it's the flip side of helplessness. I want to have the opportunity to do it differently if ever you need me again.
I've had that conversation with my oldest. Mm-hmm. I've not had that with my son.
Yeah, but the son is the key one.
Yeah. There's no reservations in me about doing that. Mm-hmm. I just don't think I've taken the time to think that he needs that from me, I need that for myself.
Right. Because if you don't clear some of these clogged parts of you, you don't feel like you are entitled to pleasure.
Mm. Yeah.
And your partner here wants to feel alive.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, I'm still making sure that nobody's dead.
Yeah.
When you say revive, what's your dream? What's your dream for the two of you?
Delight.
Say more.
Just feeling a freedom, a security.
But dreams are very vivid.
Yes.
And they're very, very detailed.
Yes. Him coming home from work, and you know, I'm home with the kids, and his connection to me is one of instant delight and being present.
What is he doing? So he comes home and what?
His physical,
mm-hmm.
pulling me close,
mm-hmm.
Looking at me, holding my gaze, kissing me, feeling like I'm the only person that exists, where all of his attention is just on me in that moment. It's nothing profound or big, but...
It actually is. The gesture is small, the meaning is big.
Mm-hmm.
I have been here for everybody. And now that everyone seems to be more okay, I would like to have your attention on me.
Mm-hmm.
And not because you want to rescue me, but because you delight in me.
Mm-hmm. When we met, I was flourishing. And I had the bandwidth when I came in. I was full. And now I feel like deflated. Exhausted, and I mean, it's just been one thing after another. When we got married, he left in that first month. I get a phone call from the high school saying our oldest had overdosed. And in that moment, I remember thinking, I need to teach these kids how to suffer well and fight for life.
It's interesting how you just put it, to suffer well and to fight for life.
Mm-hmm.
To me, what helps the most is to have meaning.
Absolutely.
The meaning is what allows us to tolerate the pain,
mm-hmm.
which is what you have done in your relation to him.
Mm-hmm.
It's your love for him. It's your connection to him. That's what has allowed you to tolerate all of this.
Well, and when we met, I thought, here's a man who's gone through unbelievable circumstances, and he's got his act together, and he's taking care of his kids. In the face of adversity, in the face of trauma, he's rising up. And that's the kind of person I want to be connected to, because it's not if we will suffer, it's when and how do we move through it. And that I want to choose life and to choose life with him.
And when you have a glimpse of that, mm-hmm. what does it look like?
I know that she has told in utter details the traumatic experiences that she went through. I don't know that she's ever had the opportunity to talk in equal details. What an experience of reclaiming and awakening and delight would look like to her. And this is what she's invited to do.
See, when he thinks acute pain, he mm-hmm. sees the crib.
Mm-hmm.
When you see intense joy, mm-hmm. what do you see?
I can remember actually the weekend we got engaged, and we were in some little tiny town. We were waiting for the fog to lift.
Mm.
And we had your iPad out, and we were looking at houses, making plans. And in my mind, I'm like, this is our future. He has my heart, and I know I have his. And finally, like, this is the part of my life that I've been longing for. And it was, we were just sitting in some little coffee shop and an old train station, looking at houses and thinking about, talking about our future and our dreams. And I felt like he was seeing parts of me that I hadn't even been able to share yet. Just him wanting to know. We didn't talk about kids
mm-hmm.
or anything like that.
I do have a tendency to get into a manage the project kind of a mindset. You know, I'm sure that talking about logistics is not that romantic, right? It's not, doesn't evoke the erotic when you're talking about logistics. So,
but you know, a conversation where someone is deeply focused on you and attentive and curious is erotic.
Mm.
in the sense of you feel alive and awakened.
Right.
It doesn't have to be sexual.
Right. Someone's focused on you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You enter through the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
You enter through the curiosity. You enter into her universe. All of that is erotic. I'm going to say it in your own words. What you're asking from him. Actually, let me reframe that. What you're offering him.
My world, my inner world. There's no one else I would rather give that to than you. But I want you to desire that and not be intimidated, but to take me places that I haven't even allowed myself. Mm-hmm. I think that was the only thing I could protect my past experiences with.